Our text number, Ciara Morris, is on the line. Ciara, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And I know you make chutneys and relishes and you're trying to get your business going, but just a little bit of business news we got here in one call from a very, very upset supplier. Nothing to do with you, Ciara. As you know, Celtic Link, which was the ferry, very successful ferry going out of Rosslare to France, a brilliant, brilliant Irish company. They were bought 2 weeks ago in what everyone thought was a good news story by Stena, the multinational, and apparently all the suppliers, Ciara, got a letter this morning, all the Irish suppliers saying they've been delisted.
Gone.
One fell swoop. Yeah. No Irish need apply. Now, maybe Stena will clarify that, but that's the calls we're getting from suppliers. They've all been delisted. Not being told they're good, bad, and different, too dear, too cheap, or whatever. Just you're gone, as in from this morning. Up to 2 weeks ago, it was an Irish company, and now it's gone. But, Ciara, you say, and you contacted us, you said you're sick, sore and tired of all the spin and politics at the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why can't we tell the truth? People can deal with the truth. It's the truth today, tomorrow, in 100 years' time, is still the truth. If you go back over numerous tapes, it'll still be the truth, and it cannot be contradicted. What is wrong with it? That's just the point I'm trying to make, like in relation to politics nowadays, all about spin.
You asked us about the Dáil. First of all, the Dáil this week will be, as you know, the motion of no confidence in Alan Shatter. That's the main business this week in the Dáil, as far as we know. That will be defeated. Alan Shatter will still be in his job by the end of the week. The Dáil then, they were off for a week during St. Patrick's week. They will rise on the 17th of April, that's Thursday, Holy Thursday, which is Thursday fortnight. And they return 3 weeks later on the 6th of May. So there might not be all that much spin in the next period because I presume a lot of them are going to be missing next week for the state visit to the UK. So maybe there won't be as much as you feel you've been getting lately, Ciara.
Well, I hope not. As I said, like those suppliers into Celtic, the shipping company that has been bought over, like we have to work away here. We have to work 24/7, 365 days of the year nearly to make a living. You have all these people taking all these long holidays. They're bringing in consultants there to put spins on everything. And that's not what we elect them for. That's not what we elect. We elect the people that stand at the door and will actually stand and answer your questions and tell you the truth. Maybe they're just telling you what they think you want to hear. Mm-hmm. But we just need to hear the truth from these people. They're going to do what they say on the tin. That's really what we're saying. Paddy likes to know the truth. I think, in all fairness, at this point in time, I think Paddy needs to know the truth.
And do you think
don't fill it up.
You're quoting Enda Kenny there on the night of his election. Is Paddy getting the truth?
Absolutely not.
Why do you say that?
But you're spin after spin after spin. Sure, you don't need to be Einstein to figure it all out.
What side do you believe now in the Alan Shatter, Gardagate, whistleblower, tapes, Ian Bailey? What side do you believe in the Alan Shatter row?
Well,
are you befuddled like everyone else?
I'm absolutely gobsmacked. Like, the dogs on the street knew there was conversations being taped back into the 70s, and we can all understand why, and I'm around long enough to actually remember back then to the Troubles. The Garda Síochána at that time probably installed all these devices. Mm-hmm. Like, they may not have been high-tech, but they were installed because, like everywhere else, people have a leaning towards one side or the other. And maybe they might have thought there might have been somebody in the Garda that might have had a leaning towards the IRA or whatever. And you can understand that. But the ordinary general public ringing in for a 999 call or whatever to have your phone conversation tapped, it's absolutely absurd, to say the least of it.
People presume that 999 would be recorded
for
investigation. But the other stuff. And do you think what's happening in the Dáil, anything that's happening in the Dáil recently, does anything for you in your little business?
Nothing, absolutely nothing. To be quite honest with you, I'd be very disingenuous, I suppose, when I say, look, they're around and they come around and they promise you the sun's, moon and stars, but that's if you go catch them yourself. You go catch them yourself. It's all about your own ability to work hard, get out there and keep knocking on the doors. There's very, very little out there support for you. I agree with that. And there's another question when I have you there, Jonas, deviating from this. I need to know, you know, the county enterprise boards and the leader groups that were all set up in each area, just for accountability's sake, we'd like to know in each area how many jobs was created, how much money did each of these enterprise boards and the leader groups get. This is for another day for you, Joe. And how many jobs, how many sustainable jobs was...
And do you think what's happening, because people can hear the frustration in your voice, do you, and I'll talk to you about your business in a sec, but do you think anything that's happening in the Dáil in the last period, and as I say, there's going to be a 3-week recess now beginning very shortly after their week-long recess of Patrick's week, do you think anything happening in the Dáil has any relevance to you in business?
Absolutely. Well... Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no.
Fair answer.
You have all the directives from Europe, and that's where we're being ran by, is from Europe. You have directives from Europe. You have because Europe says you have to put X, Y, and Z on your label. And yes, that's us being accountable. We put all the statutory requirements on our labels and we say what's in. And that's fine and dandy, and I like that. It's being transparent. You're not doing anything wrong. Could we not apply that right across the board? Everybody puts on their label what they're supposed to be doing and what they're not supposed to be doing.
Now, your business, tell us about your business and what's the hardest thing for you in business at the moment, because you are frustrated.
Well, I'm very frustrated. As I said, you have a huge amount of new companies being set up in competition to people like myself that are there over a long number of years. And all we need at this point in time is to establish businesses out there to actually be supported, rather than trying to bring somebody new just because they're setting up a new company and it looks good on the CSO and all that. It looks perfect. But 2 years down the line, most of these companies will come up against all the same roadblocks that I have come up against.
Okay.
And Ciara, can be there to support them.
51551 is our text number. But Ciara, in your day-to-day business, so like we get calls from business people saying it's the rates, it's the rents, it's the... A lot of the time it can be issues to do with labour. What is the hardest thing for you in business at the moment?
Well, I suppose it's like everything else. You're dealing with multiples and things like that. And all the delisting.
Okay, well tell us that.
Don't give you any reason.
Because that's where,
don't give you a reason.
As I say, Stena bought Celtic Link, the Celtic's very big, big Irish company. Everyone thought it was a good news story. And apparently the letter went out to all the Irish suppliers this morning, down around Rosslare, Enniscorthy, Gorey, Wexford, Waterford, Kilmore Quay. Good luck, you're gone. We're going to buy our product in another country. What is it like for you dealing with your end of the business, which would be supermarkets and retailers?
It's fine, but the small retailers, they're over and out, really. There's very, very few small independent stores out there. And if you have the independent stores, like... They're so sparsely populated that, they're in every town. Well, you're not going to go into a town to put in 24 of anything into any store because it's not viable. So you have got to deal with the multiples. But the multiples have a huge amount of stuff on their shelves that's been imported, been made out foreign.
And brought in. What's the name of your chutneys? Do you want to give us the name?
Sleebloom.
Sleebloom, lovely name. Okay.
Yes.
Can you get your product into supermarkets?
Oh, yes. We deal with Tesco, and we deal with Super Value. We used to deal with Super Queen as well. But, a lot of people, it's difficult. It's difficult. And when you go in to deal with the likes of Tesco and Super Value and things like that, it's difficult really to deal with them insofar as they'll take you in and they'll list you. But you could be delisted just as quickly if you're not performing well, if you don't sell X, Y, and Z off that foot space that you get on the shelf every day or every week, you'll be gone. It's all about making money and that's it. But if we hadn't so much competition from all the products that are being imported, yes, I think people would support the Irish and quality products, in particular quality products that we're trying to sell. We try to keep everything to a minimum price and we're grateful for all the people that do support us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the supermarkets need to stand back and have a good look at their policy in the stores and just I could be making for myself today under Sleebloom. I could be making for somebody else as well. And I'm really only competing against myself by putting it in, doing an own brand label for somebody. And that's what's going on. And the general public don't really realise that.
And you also say in your call here, I want to go back to the Jack Lynch era. There was no such thing as consultants, advisors, all this carry on. Why do you think that would make a difference and spin doctor?
Well,
why would that make a difference?
Well, I think those people might be a little bit more accountable, I think, when they have to answer to the ordinary general public, and just tell the truth. There's nothing wrong telling the truth. As I said, it was a venial sin years ago, not to tell the truth. It has got to a humongous state now where it's actually cardinal sins that are telling. And we grew up in the days like when you were afraid to tell a lie. You were afraid to tell the lies. Nowadays, it's just part and parcel of life.
Okay, stay there, Ciara. 51551 and 1857-15815. Christine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Christine, you think there is authenticity and you think Enda Kenny showed it last week?
Well, there's always authenticity, but we... You know, I think the most authentic moment in a really dark week last week for me was when I saw Enda Kenny at the funeral of Nicky.
Nicky McFadden, at the TD.
Yeah, Nicky McFadden. And that moment for me just, I don't know, it just put me in touch with who we really are.
Okay, for those who didn't see or hear, tell us.
Well, he was giving... a speech at the graveside,
the oration,
not even a speech, just he wasn't even given a speech, he was just speaking at the graveside, and he just mentioned that she was a beautiful woman with a beautiful mind. And when he went into how much she meant to him and to her colleagues and everything, he got extremely emotional and he got upset. And it was just in that moment that we really got to see that we're all connected. All of us as human beings are connected. And that moment for me moved me, really moved me. And when I compared it to the rest of the week where authenticity was all over the place, there was no authentic moment in anything for the whole of the week. And that moment just brought it home. How important it is
and
that we do connect.
When you say no authentic moment and the rest, of, you're speaking about the doll, are you? What are you talking about?
Well, I am. I'm speaking about just
the ping pong, the institutions,
the scandals. We can't sift through and pull back all the illusions that we're being told all the time.
And what do you think?
It's all a kind of an illusion. Well, we can't actually just get down to what is really real for everybody and for us, and the impact that it has on every person in the country. And it has an impact on us. So as much as it has an impact on us when we see an authentic moment, it has just as much of an impact when we see inauthenticity all over the place. But it doesn't move us. It makes us angry.
And you think that's what we're seeing at the minute?
I do.
Okay, well, you're about to see it for another week because, you know, there's a motion of no confidence in Alan Shatter. And that'll be debated. We know the outcome.
I mean,
he will survive.
Does it make any difference?
Well, I'm asking, do you think that's authentic? Do you think what's happening in the doll at the minute is authentic?
No. And I don't think I'm alone in that.
You feel it's...
I think it's games and, you know, and it's like everything is an illusion and we can't pull back the veil of that illusion to see what's really real. And that reality, if you pulled it back, that impacts on everybody. It's the impact, the damage. It's the damage.
So what effect does this have on the person that's trying to pay their property tax and worried about the other taxes, tolls, charges, excise duties that they're going to have to pay, worried about their job? What impact does all of what's happening in the doll have on their lives? You say this people feel it's inauthentic.
Well, I think what the impact that... Well, I can't speak for anybody else.
No, speak
I can
for yourself.
Speak for
yeah,
me.
Fine, yeah.
Yeah, and what I see is a growing disconnection for me from all of it, because if I was to go into this every day and follow it every day, and I used to, but I on some level I've given up, Joe, because I just get so upset. Because this is my country too. I live here, I work here. I am trying to bring a family up to be decent citizens here. I'm trying to bring my family up to be authentic and to be truthful and to be honest. And what reward will I get for that? By the leaders who are leading me and leading my children and leading my country. That's what really impacts on me. I feel a bit devastated by it, to be honest. And I'm thinking, well, I've no power. I'm totally disempowered by all of it. And all I can do is just literally put one foot forward every day, mm-hmm. in spite of all the circumstances that I personally deal with on a daily basis. And just keep trying to put my foot forward and just try to keep going. But at the bottom of the day, at the end of the day, mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do the most, what I really, really want more than anything else, is to be authentic in my own life and to have integrity in my own life. It has to start with me.
Okay.
And I cannot change the institutions. I don't have the power to change the institutions. My vote is irrelevant. So the only thing then that I'm left empowered to do is to one by one change at, or transform myself, you know, and really deal with myself, really take myself on and deal with my own inauthenticity. Am I always authentic? Of course not.
But you say you feel your vote is irrelevant. We've the local elections coming up in May. We've the European elections coming up in May. Will that make a difference?
No. The only thing that will, because you, it can't make a difference for the simple reason, Joe, if you're trying to change the system or you're trying to change things, you can't change it without transforming it. And there is no transformation. And that is the problem. Nothing has changed since the last election. Nothing. And nothing will change in the next election. And that's where the inauthenticity is coming in.
Yeah, but Christine, regardless of how many people turn out for the local elections or the European elections, regardless of, or indeed the next general election, somebody is going to be elected. You know,
the
same number of people will be elected. So,
but they're elected to jobs, Joe. That's the problem.
Yeah, but
they're elected to jobs.
But
the jobs have absolutely, really and truly, it's just, I'm elected, when somebody comes to my door and asks me to elect them, they're asking me to give them a job. Now, if I go for a job, I go for an interview. I have to provide my qualifications. Mm-hmm. I have to show that I'm fit to do the job. And I have to prove when I'm in there that I'm capable of doing the job. And the problem is that there's a lot of people who really, maybe, I don't know if it's what the qualification levels are right across the system from the very lowest levels to the highest levels. And maybe that's a problem, you know, that people have gone up through the ranks without the necessary education.
Well, the qualification is you decide to stand or you get a nomination. Rightly so, there's no educational qualification. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a proper democracy. Though you're arguing we don't have a proper democracy. For example, Christine, I know you're in Wicklow. Did you have a view on the decision by councillors in Dublin not even to allow Dublin people to have a vote on whether they want an elected mayor or not? They won't even let the people have a vote. Do you have a view on that? Or do you think it's irrelevant anyway?
I think it's irrelevant anyway.
Okay.
So what?
God, that's very... You're very... God, Christine, you're very cast down.
Well, I'm not cast down. I don't feel cast down. I feel that at the end of the day,
you were paying for a political system, and you're paying dearly for it through your taxes. Right?
Yeah,
and that's the world we live in. You're paying for a political system. You pay the expenses, the salaries, the administration, the pensions, all that carry on. You're paying for that right across the board. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you say you're completely disengaged from it. And then I presume I detect in your voice as well, like every other family in the country, you're stretched with all the bills that are coming in at the minute and all the bills that are going to come in. So, like, in one sense,
if I was to tell you the stress and my story, you actually wouldn't believe my story since 2008.
Why not?
And well, I don't want to actually go into it, but my personal circumstances have been absolutely unbelievable since 2008. But somehow I find the courage to keep putting one foot in front of the other, time and time and time again. And yet I'm surrounded by a system which, when I look at it, I'm thinking, why is the country like this?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take back the responsibility and bring it back to myself and bring back where is my own authenticity? Where
so
is this out?
Let me ask,
that's where I'm at.
But Christine, let me ask you the question I put to Ciara, who's to spark this debate. D- and what you have heard in the Dáil and on the media non-stop in the last month or so, does it have a bearing on your day-to-day life?
Of course it does.
In what way?
Well, if I am to stay with my head above water, I actually really can't watch this every day and I can't listen to it every day because it's non-stop dragging us down with no hope being shone as a light for the future. Nothing.
No hope.
Well, can anybody see the hope in the system as it stands? Or am I on my own? I would love the listeners now to get back to you and let you know. Am I the only person in the country that feels that the system is broken? The system is completely shattered and our trust in it is shattered.
Okay.
It's shattered.
Stay there, Christine. Paul is on his tractor in Wexford. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm just ringing up there with a general...
First of all, if you're in, Paul, I just want to ask you, because of that, the calls we got before, you're not one of the suppliers to Celtic Link that was delisted by Stena this morning in one fell swoop. Okay. You're on your tractor, on your farm in Wexford. You're listening to Ciara and Christine. Go ahead.
I live in Arklow, John. It's just a general point regarding employment in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Like in Arklow town back in 1980, 34 years ago, the unemployment rate was 1% or less. Today, the unemployment rate in Arklow is over 50%.
Oh, God.
In a population of 15,000. And all the indigenous Irish industries are gone. Like Arklow Pottery was there for 65 years, from 1934 to 1999. The fertilizer plant closed. There's over 2,000 working in it. But there's no other town in Europe in such close proximity to its capital, which is only half an hour, in such a dilapidated and derelict state. And it's just a general observation.
Arklow used to be a busy port.
I was the third busiest port in Ireland after Dublin and after Cork, the third busiest port. You had busloads of people coming into Arklow every day to work in all the local industries. Armitage Shanks, Arklow Pottery, the fertiliser plant. You had a breast implant factory that closed 7 or 8 years ago. 300 people lost their jobs. But when I look at companies like Intel, an announcement there last week of $5.2 billion investment...
Which, in fairness, they'd already spent. It was an announcement they made before. Yeah. But anyway, I thought it was a new investment, but they've already spent it. But anyway, every announcement is a good announcement, no matter how many times you make it and repeat it. But anyway, you're saying about Intel, which is a fantastic employer, 4,000 people
Brilliant.
In Kildare. Yeah.
But what happens when they get enticed away to the Far East or somewhere like that, where they get a better tax break or so on and so forth, they'll shut up shop and they'll be gone, regardless of the investment that they've made in this country? And I just saw that happening with, as I said, breast implant factory in Arklow, 8 years ago, it's gone. But it's just a general point. You have it right in Dublin's doorstep, 30 minutes away, an unemployment figure of over 50%, where it used to be 1% or less. There's never been a town, Joe, in this country with an unemployment rate of 1% or less, or I would say in Europe either. It was incredible. And now you look at all these indigenous industries, they've never been replaced.
Okay.
Never.
Paul,
stay
with us if you can. I know you're busy on the farm working and you're on your tractor. I want to talk to you about your children. You raised that as well. I can hear the upset in your voice. I have a load of other people who want to join in. Stay with us. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Paul is in Wexford. Oh, he's he lives in Arklow, so he's over the border there, so to speak, the county borders, on his tractor. He's a beef farmer. Paul, your children.
Yeah, stepchildren, what do you call it? None of them will get work in Arklow, Joe, because what do you call it? There's no employment.
What's their prospects?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know what the prospects of any young people in this country are, but it's exceptionally sad when you see about 200,000 people having left the country in the last six years. But a general point is that a lot of these people will emigrate, they'll have children abroad, so you're losing a second generation as well, and you get children coming back to Ireland to see where their parents were raised when they should have been born here in the first place. That's just another aside that you don't hear too much about. You know, you're losing two generations of people when you have immigration, you know.
And Paul, you obviously have a radio in your tractor. When you're listening to what you've been listening to over the last month or so, do you think it has any relevance to your day-to-day life?
Very little, to be quite honest with you. This is regarding the GSOC and all the rest of it, isn't it?
Yeah, everything. Well, it's been non-stop.
I just think people... There's a great sense of community in this country still. Mm-hmm. Local communities, people looking out for each other, helping each other and so on. people are relying more on each other than they are on politicians, whether they be local or national politicians. And I think you see that in fundraising events, charities and so on. Irish people are absolutely brilliant, but I think they've been failed hugely by consecutive governments, regardless of the hue of that government or what party that they represent. You get a lot of good local politicians, you get some very superb independent politicians, but they lack leverage in it all. And generally speaking, Irish people, they look out for each other through the communities. We're beginning to rely less and less on politicians, and people just have no faith in politicians, to be honest with you. And I think it's indicative of this country in the last 15 years in particular. People have lost faith in politicians and they've lost faith in the church, but they still haven't lost a sense of faith in their local communities. I think that's still very strong, and it's probably stronger now after going through a recession and so on, and unemployment and immigration.
Because everywhere you go, I was down in Wexford and indeed around Arklow recently. One, I totally agree with you, that whole landscape in Arklow, the docks in Arklow is like a lunar landscape at the minute with all the companies gone and closed. And then on the other hand, you drive down the road and every second lamppost has a poster for a Strictly Come Dancing charity event or a GAA event to raise money for somebody who's in diffs or somebody who needs healthcare. Stay there, Paul, if you can, for a sec. Paul, Mary Cunningham. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Joe. Fed up to the teeth, the whole carry-on, Joe.
Well, do you think what's happening in the Dáil...
There's more holidays now at Easter again.
Well, the 17th of April to the 6th of May.
Outrageous. And Joe, I'm a peace commissioner, as you know, and I deal with ordinary rank and file Gardaí.
Right.
And I honestly can say that they're the top of the range and very good with the community and there if they're needed. And they're demoralised by all this carry-on and scoring points in the Dáil. And I just think, you heard of Nero fiddling while Rome burned. Well, I think that man's right. Local communities, we're all sticking together because there's nobody else to stand up for us.
But do you think what's happening in the Dáil, and again, this week is going to be dominated by Alan Shatter, it won't be a shatter-free zone in that sense. There's a motion of no confidence put down by Fianna Fáil. Do you think what's happening in the Dáil, it's the same question I asked Christine, because Ciara brought it up, Mary and Paul, do you think what's happening in the Dáil has a relevance to your life?
Absolutely none, only to make me more angry, Joe. Wasting time and the business of the country and the worries of the communities and people they're supposed to be representing are being just left aside, and the people are very angry, Joe, and would you blame them? And if you're sitting with the directly elected mayor for Dublin, Joe, I think the people should be entitled, if they wish, to elect their mayor.
No, the decision made last night...
Bengal, I think, went against it.
Yeah, but the decision last night wasn't about whether they're entitled to elect their mayor or not. The decision last night is that they're not even entitled to have a say in whether they elect their...
Well, on
the decision of whether they elect their mayor or not.
Yeah,
that's the decision.
That's outrageous.
They won't let the people decide.
But the people will decide in the future. But the seething anger is out there.
But Mary, how's it been channeled? People don't want to see it being channeled, I think, anyway, from what I heard this morning, into young Gardaí outside the Department of Justice getting a can of toxic paint thrown into his face.
Disgrace.
People don't want to see that
now. Gardaí are brilliant and absolutely, I see.
Yeah, but how do you? My question is, nobody in their right mind wants to see that nonsense throwing cans of toxic paint into the face of a young guard, right?
No.
But how do people channel their anger?
Well,
because Christine and Ciara are saying we feel powerless.
That are to blame, and it's not the young Gardaí. And I do believe that the commissioner of the Gardaí was shafted, to be quite honest with you. They don't channel it that way anyway, by violence, Joe. And the ordinary rank and file Gardaí, both Vanguard and our ordinary Gardaí, are second to none, and the people are very much with them. At the headquarters and in the Dáil, the people are fed up with it.
Paul, you want to come back in there?
Just aside from political controversies and all the rest of it, Joe, just make a general statement. There's outstanding people in this country committing heroic acts every day, caring for elderly people, people who are infirm, people who are sick. Absolutely superb.
Carers.
I care for my brother myself. You get very little thanks for it or very little gratitude from the government or for anybody else, and it's quite lonely, to be honest with you. But there's great people out there in this country. It's a great country. There's just great people in it. And it can be all very negative and doom and gloom and so on and so forth. But class is always very understated. People who have a lot of class. Heroism is very understated. They won't make any headlines on the Evening Herald or Irish Independent or anything like that. But there's great people getting up there every day, struggling, looking after their relatives, looking after their friends, doing brilliant things. And it's important to remember that.
Yeah, hear, hear.
I have to go, Joe.
Okay, Paul, off with your work. God bless your work. Okay, that's Paul on a farm down in Wexford. Veronica Barrett. Veronica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
51551. You're listening to the various Kira.
Yeah,
Christine.
I am. Sure. Look, you know, it's a very sad situation we're in right now in this country.
Well, the question that Kira raised was she felt that what's happening in the Dáil in the last few weeks and is going to happen now for the next few weeks, it seems, until they rise for Easter, has no relevance to her life.
Well, it probably hasn't to millions of people's lives in this country, because, everybody else that's out there just going about their business and trying to keep their heads above water is what most people are trying to do. I live in Galway, northeast Galway, and I look at my local town, Bannonslow, and there's two factories closed down there over the past number of years. And I see it in many towns. American companies came in here and they got millions for coming in and setting up. And when they decided they wanted to get cheaper labour elsewhere, they up sticks and they went. And we have two massive big buildings in the Dunbannonslow town. One belong to AT Across and one belong to Square D. Nothing happening. They're falling apart. They're going to fall down.
The pen factory is gone.
Oh, it's gone for years.
Oh, sorry. Okay, that's why. I know
this
still...
And so is Square D as well. Yeah, a number of years now. Quite a number of years gone now. Huge. I mean, I see the job that I do. I'm the head of a company, as you kind of would have known from the past talking to me. We provide exactly what that man before me was talking about, home care. In the community over three counties, and we do it on a non-commercial basis, but we can't get a penny funding anywhere. And we're creating jobs week after week, and we have the best workforce that you could come across. They go into their clients, and whether if it's an hour or 2 hours, many of them stay to chat and talk to these clients over the 2 hours. They're not racing and timed to the last minute. We give care and we give social care.
And they are the local heroes and heroines that Paul is talking about. But Veronica, what is the hardest thing for you in business at the moment in Ireland?
Well, I mean, because we're non-commercial, to keep everything afloat, and we don't get any, as I said, we applied on numerous occasions to different areas for funding and we didn't get it. And that's the hardest thing every day is making sure that, that we have a horrendously high wage bill every month because we have 500 people in employment.
Wow.
So, they have to be paid and we have 1,000 clients on the ground and they have to be given the best quality care that we can possibly manage.
And this
we have supervisors out there and coordinators. Everybody has to be paid. So that's my job to make sure that everything is in place and that, that everything is going according to plan. And in the latter days, it does. It's not easy. And, we are planning at all times to expand into other counties, but it's extremely hard when you can't get a penny funding anywhere.
And this argument that's bubbling under at the moment, Veronica, 500 employees, this argument from the trade unions are articulating it. One, that people have now, their taxes have increased dramatically since 2008. The number of taxes and the extent of the tax itself, the number of taxes and the extent it have increased dramatically, and that's putting pressure on people looking for wage increases. Is that coming through in your area?
I understand that completely, and why wouldn't they be looking for it? Because they all have to live as well, and it really is hard. And I see it day in, day out, everywhere. You hear people talking in the shops and, anywhere you go, the cost of everything, even everyday stuff. I'm not talking about luxuries like cigarettes or alcohol. I'm talking about everyday stuff that's needed for families, And when I see families with big families, when you're talking about anything 6+, it must be incredibly hard, for them to keep every side paid. And, there's not enough work. And sure, we have county council elections now coming up in May.
Have they a relevance to you? Have they a meaning for you, those elections?
Well, I don't know. What do they have enough of power to change anything? there'd be good people now in, that I would know. I would know good people, good hard workers.
Yeah.
But if your hands are tied behind your back, power-wise, how are you? What are you going to be able to achieve?
Stay with us for a sec, Veronica. Desi Farrell is listening to Paul. Paul, the farmer. Desi, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
Good, you're listening.
Joe, I'm just listening here as I'm painting away, and I'm just wondering, why can't we start up the sugar beet industry again? And, like, everyone was walking then. And it just,
yeah, but
it's
Desi,
you know why. No,
because the government made the decision about 7 or 8 years ago that we would give away our sugar beet quota. It was a governmental decision. It was Fianna Fáil, as it happened, but I presume it was a deal in the EU to give away. And there's a campaign, and I know Tom Barry, the Fine Gael TD, has been leading the campaign to try and get a sugar beet factory up. And I don't think anyone would disagree with you, Desi, to go into a supermarket and see the word Sucre on a pack and then to discover it's produced in Israel or Germany or whatever is borders on the laughable. I mean, it's a very good product, but there's no sugar being produced here. But that was a political decision, Desi. That wasn't an accidental decision.
It's an awful pity that can't be reversed, because the other half of the country would be walking and we could bring our children home to here instead of watching them away walking, you know what I mean? It's very sad.
And have you children, Desi?
Well, yeah, I have, and I've one away. He's away at the minute walking, but the same thing as I say to you, if everybody was back home here, he could be back home here as well. Like, you know, there'd be room for everybody if the government...
And what's it? Paul was making the point that, and through all this, that there is a great sense of community out there still, and especially in rural areas.
Just everyone, Joe. Everyone is getting disillusioned, Joe. I'm looking at them every night. You can't listen to the news anymore because it's sad, and you're looking at people getting evicted, especially the anti-eviction and they're doing a great job, but it's terrible sad. The kids just are afraid to tell each other that they're behind in their mortgage, and no one is actually coming out to talk about it, because it's like a moral sin. It's like having a child out of wedlock 40 years ago in Ireland. The children are afraid to tell each other, we're in arrears, and that's how the banks are picking them off, and the likes.
And then by the time they do...
By the time they come forward, Joe, they already have the bailiffs moved in, and the bailiffs is telling you, we're only doing our job. It's all over again. Like the 100 years ago. It's just an awful pity. It's just taboo to come out and say, I'm behind on my mortgage. I can't pay it.
Okay.
I was caught. I was out there trying to work. I was one of the people trying my best, and I was caught in the trap. And the bankers are laughing all the way, you know, and everyone else around them. And it's just a pity that I have to say to you, the only one that I see standing up and starting to do anything is that mate, the anti-eviction crowd, and fair play to them. I'm just looking at them there on the internet every night, and they're the only ones doing anything about it. We're all just sitting here like ducks in a barrel getting shot.
And Desi, you mentioned that you're a painter. I see that in your car. Yeah, okay. But if, I don't know whether you saw that young guard last night outside the apartment just getting a can of paint thrown into his face.
Yeah.
Surely that's dangerous. Nothing. And just tell me what is...
I have to say it to you. No, I wouldn't agree with that. I really, really wouldn't agree with that. There's no human being that should happen to. Nobody. And especially a guard. Like, you know. But I definitely wouldn't agree with that.
Well, I presume it does damage to I presume it does damage to your eyes. I presume you don't want paint going into your eyes for a start.
I don't imagine they would use dangerous paint, would they?
Well, they use paint.
I don't think they meant to get the gate anyway. But either way, Joe, I wouldn't know about that.
No, I'm
but
just the making the point.
I hope it just washed over. I hope it was a bit of a motion and it washed over.
Okay.
And I don't think that guard is mine. To say that guard is laughing somewhere now.
Well, hopefully he's okay. Yeah. Thanks indeed, Desi. Let me bring Pádraig McLaughlin. Pádraig, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
You're living in Leitrim.
I'm living in Leitrim, and I think the politicians are completely out of touch with the people altogether.
Why do you say that?
About Alan Shatter. Well, I'm chairman of the Mull GAA Club, and I was at a Leitrim match. I know we didn't come out the right side of it at the weekend, but to be talking to the people in general, that's not the topic of conversation about Alan Shatter or what's going on. It's what's about the unemployment for youngsters and what's been done here in Leitrim for people. And to think that these politicians are going to spend 2 days again above in Dáil Éireann discussing a no-confidence vote, which we know which way it's going to turn out at the end of the day with the majority the government have. It's a complete and total waste of time, and I think people are disillusioned altogether with what's going on.
And, Pádraig, what do you think they should be doing in the Dáil?
Well, they should be doing something about youngsters. I have four of a family myself. They should be doing something about unemployment. Like, in Leitrim here, there's nothing happening at all in the line of employment, you know. Our youngsters have to head off. There's nothing in this country for them.
if they were jumping up and down about that, you'd have some interest in it. I'm so disgusted with it. I drive the machine part-time here, and I listen to the radio a lot, but I turned it off with News at 1, and I heard Micheál Martin coming on again talking the same rubbish about Alan Shatter. And Alan Shatter, if he did something about, he's in opposition, he was long enough in government, but they should be doing something to try to move the country on.
And the argument Fianna Fáil would make, this is an issue of trust, this is an issue of transparency, this is an issue of the security of the state, this is an issue that would, I think there's four different commissions set up in the last month which will cost millions, I presume, absolutely millions.
No, sorry, but can they not wait and let these commissions do their job, and if they don't work out, then come up with something? If we seem to be trying to push, looking for answers, I know things isn't being done right, but it isn't the main issue. It isn't the main issue with the people. And I think people are fed to the back teeth. We're facing into local elections again. And as far as I'm concerned, there's far too many councillors in, even in this county, for all they're doing.
Well, I presume one of the reasons there is such a long break, 3 weeks after the break for the St. Patrick's week, there's 3 weeks over Easter, is because of the local elections and canvassing. And.
But they can make it up as they go along. You know what I mean? There's, the people that I'm speaking to anybody are sick of what's going on. And the sooner we get, I don't know how we'll sort it out, because people are sick of politics in general. It's not, I'm not aligned to any party, but the more you listen to what's going on, it's like a squabble about, they're only scoring points on themselves all the time, you know.
Okay, Páraic and Leitrim, Veronica and Galway, stay there, and Páraic and Colette in Middleton after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Colette Bailey's in Middleton. Colette, you came back to Ireland, you say, in 2006.
Yes, I went in 2006, Joe, and I came back about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I just feel that since I came back, that reality is lost, especially with these politicians. I really do. We have more pressing issues out there that need to be sorted. There's people absolutely living from hour to hour, not even day to day, money-wise. And it needs to be sorted. Okay, Alan Shatter and Enda Kenny, you know, it's they just need to help people. It's, you know, can this thing just be not forgotten, but put aside to a certain extent, then, you know, and deal with what's happening in Ireland at the moment?
Well, I think there are four separate committees. I think all the judges have been brought out of retirement at this stage. They've been told to take off their smoking jackets and get out of their dusty libraries and do this job. I presume they'll be paid for it. But I think there's four separate inquiries. But there's four separate inquiries been set up in the last month. Is that not enough?
Okay, well, I tell you, I know there's ins and outs about this, but I mean, these judges are being brought out. They will get paid. They'll get expenses.
Yeah, well,
they'll
that's
get
right.
Watches.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Of course, I mean, I'm not denying that, but the fact is, Joe, I mean, there's people out there, and as you know, I mean, I listen to you every day. They're in desperation, okay? I know two ladies, okay, that need home help, and they can't get it. And then one of them got their hours cut and of the home help, and they were told, oh, she's going on holidays, you can just do without it. You know, Joe, I mean, you know, I would love to get into politics, and I hope to do eventually when I have the time and not family commitment.
Well, what do you think they should be talking about in the Dáil?
Well, I mean, they should be talking about Ireland in general. I mean, I just feel that when people go into, you know, the government or politicians, they just lose contact with their people. And it's the, you know, to get out more and meet people more and see what's happening.
Yeah, but I sense today is different, because when Ciara came on at the start, there was no other calls coming through earlier on about what. And then the minute Ciara opened the sluice gates and she started going on about this disenchantment and what was happening in the Dáil at the minute had no relevance to her trying to keep her small business going. Then people start.
I'm sorry, it doesn't. And I mean, in my capacity, I used to be a revenue collector in rent and rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was before I left. And I worked up 2 weeks before I left. And I saw people struggling then, Joe. But I see it, Joe. I see it in the supermarkets. I see, you know.
You think it's worse?
Oh, I think it's 10 times worse, Joe. And you know, Joe, what I feel sad about, okay? People are all blaming the builders. They say this and that. But when you see the builders, they're suffering now as well. You know, everybody can ride a wave, Joe. You know, we all do. When it's good, Joe. But when it's bad, it's bloody bad. And at the moment, Ireland is bad. And I just see it on a day-to-day. And if you meet people, you can sense it. I mean, I won't take up much of your time, Joe, but I just feel that when people get to this level and put on those suits and their expensive ties and their expensive shirts, reality is lost, Joe.
And that's what I want to get back to Ireland.
But why do you think... But there is a difference today, and that is that people seem to be saying, almost since Christmas, they've been listening to this stuff about... you know, the arguments is important, and transparency and security and accountability and all that kind of. But what people seem to be saying today is, hang on a minute, I have to pay my property tax by tomorrow. I've income tax, and I think it was Christine earlier who said that she feels there's no hope. There's no, sorry, and she, by the way, on the one hand, she does believe family, community, ball, farmer, tractor, hope in terms of embracing carers, all that carry on. That's going on at one level. But at the other level, this is what people seem to be tapping into today. At the political level, it seems to be totally irrelevant. And
These things don't matter, Joe.
But they do matter.
They do matter. But also, I mean, there's people out there who are in desperation because they're afraid their medical cards are going to be taken, Joe. You know?
Yeah.
Do you know where I'm coming from?
I do. So what?
It's total reality, Joe. And it needs people, Joe, to go out there. I mean, like your show. I mean, you just really have helped so many people. And I'm not putting you on a pedestal or anything, but it's just to get out there, Joe, and know what's happening. It's just sad, Joe. It's really, really sad. You know, I mean, I meet people going up my street, you know, or wherever, and you just hear stories, and it's just, you know, somebody needs to help these people. And it's not in the door that's going to be helped, Joe. They need to get down on the ground, and somebody needs to help these people, you know, because there is help to be given, and it should be given.
And how's Middleton doing? Like, you have the distillery.
Middleton is a great town. And do you know what they have, Joe, here? A community spirit. And the guy in the tractor is right. Mm-hmm. He said community is looking after people. And he was one good guy because he really, you know, was looking at the broader picture about people going away and everything. I mean, I have four kids. One's in Dublin, three are in school in Middleton. And I don't want them to go away, Joe. I really don't. I've been away. It is a lonely life being away because I love Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I love being back. But I see we need to help our people.
And why did you come back? So you were away for 18 months.
I'll tell you why I came back, Joe. Mm. I didn't have to come back. When my husband, now he's in, where is he at the moment? He's somewhere in the Emirates at the moment. We came back because I have an aunt and I have a mum who are getting on in years.
Okay.
And you can't buy time, Joe. And no matter what, I love Ireland. Out of all the countries I've ever been into, and I've been in a lot, it's the best in the world. And people...
And you wanted to come back before...
I came back, basically, because, yes, I did.
Before it was too late.
I wanted to come back before it was too late. You know, they're in their 80s, Joe, and you can't buy time. And also, I wanted to come back also because my profession was a revenue collector and I was in business, I wanted to retrain as something else in social science, which I'm graduating in 5 weeks' time.
And congratulations. And where's your husband?
He's in Qatar, actually, today.
Okay.
So he is. But, I mean, he works, he just travels, he still travels over the world, all over the world. He could be home for a week or so. But that's the life we lead, Joe, because it's the only way we've known since my little girl was four, you know, and she's 24 now. And it's just, that's the life we do. And, but no, I just realised when I worked in that capacity that maybe I some days can raise my voice and help people. And, you know, I'm not a good Samaritan in any way, but I feel that somebody needs to speak up, Joe. Even if someone to stand at that lovely carp in the doll and say, we need to help our people.
Okay,
that's,
Colette.
That's the message I want to get across.
And you've got it across. Greg, that's Colette Bailey. Stay there if we wish. Colette. Greg Adam wants to come in. Greg, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
51551. You're now drawing in the directly elected mayor of Dublin, which you won't even be allowed have a vote on whether it should happen or not. Not about who, but whether it should happen or not. That's gone.
I'm not sure. I think it's appalling what's happened out in Fingal. I don't know what planet they live on, but I think the councillors out there, I don't understand their view of democracy if that's what they've done. But I can tell you they should be afraid of a directly elected mayor. That's probably why they did it. So my choice for directly elected mayor, Joe, would be, after seeing an interview in the Telegraph, was Michael O'Leary. He said he wouldn't be suited as a politician because he wouldn't be able to toe the line and he'd speak his mind. That's exactly why he should be the mayor of Dublin. He'd be able to speak his mind.
Yeah, but he also, unfair. I know he always says that, but the other thing he said in the Telegraph was that he's action-orientated.
Exactly, delivery. In other words, if you went out to a town in Spain called La Coruna, the footballers would know of that place, there was a guy out there, the regulated mayor was called the Mole. And the reason he's called a mole was he put a huge amount of underground parking in the city, and he transformed the city. It's absolutely a gorgeous place. And that was one exact thing that guy did. So the directly elected mayors, our impression might be is the American impression, some of the films we see. But in fact, in Europe, which we should be looking to more than maybe the US, you see that they can do enormous good. And of course, that doesn't suit the politicians the way they carry on.
I mean, why? Well,
the election system, Joe, you know, it's locally based. So in every multi-seat constituency, your most feared opponent is the member of your party that might be going for election. And consequently, this localism gets people doing an awful lot of stuff that's absolutely of no added value, as opposed to trying to retain your seat for the next election. Whereas a directly elected mayor, there isn't that opposition. It's a single-seat constituency, and therefore you'll get re-elected on the basis of what you do, or you won't get elected on the basis of what you won't do. So in other words, it's very clear that it's delivery. There isn't multiple kind of concerns here when you're operating. It's single focus, and you either do it or you don't. A guy like O'Leary, I have no problem with what he says, and we find it very hard. For example, with all the Garda controversy, and I won't get into it, but the problem was people don't like being told something that and that's not necessarily the truth, but in a certain way, they just can't handle it. And this whole thing about trying to make apologies and it's absolutely absurd. You know, I feel apologize to my 5-year-old child every so often. I mean, why wouldn't you? And they just don't get it. Whereas O'Leary will say it, but on the other hand, his delivery, and forget what he says, but if he was in any other country in Europe, they'd have a statue to him because he's done more for the integration of Europe than his company has than anybody else. And in Ireland, they've got begrudgery mentality. We don't.
So why do you... That. Well, Greg, OK, put your frame on it. Why do you think the councillors in Fingal voted and vetoed the right of people in Dublin to have a vote not on who should be a directly elected mayor, but on whether they should. So not even North Korea would stop you having that vote.
Well, they of course, have a turnout higher than 100% of their polls. I mean, the 200% supporting
their stuff. They try and keep it down. My comment about North Korea is unfair.
But the point I'm making is,
why would councillors decide that the people should not even be allowed decide whether they should have a directly elected mayor or not, regardless of what would happen down the road about who, when, what?
It'd be quite simple. It's a dilution of their power. They'd see themselves doing an awful lot of local work and pounding on the doorsteps and doing all the local things they do. And they do. They do some marvellous work, these guys. I've no doubt about that. They'd see this as some rock star like O'Leary coming in, wherever it would be, and he'd take all the glory. And, you know, therefore... That's at my expense. You know, it's a bit like the old John Healy phrase. You know,
But Greg, sorry, I'm not making myself clear. That's fair. That argument is fair enough. But they can make that argument and still allow people to decide what they think about the argument. But now they've decided that they won't even allow the people to think about the pros and cons.
But all they're saying, all they're doing is they're saying it's at our expense. You're doing this directly elected mayor, and we're not happy to do it. So Phil Hogan gave them the facility to, if any one of them didn't vote it in a majority, it all fell. I can understand why he did that, but simply they're saying, they must be saying, we'll be irrelevant after a directly elected mayor, after all our work, we're not having that. And that's open to them to do it. The fact that Phil gave them any one of the four not voting in favour meant that the smallest, effectively, had a much larger proportionate vote on this, and they just said, well, we're not going to do it. So it didn't matter that the other three
I know. They had a veto.
In favour. And they came down to it, and they said, well, this is at our expense, and we're not having it. I mean, I don't know if you brought any of those guys on, but, I mean, anybody sees competition like that, a direct elected mayor, in my view, would be the best thing that ever happened or could ever happen to Dublin or any other city for that matter, because of what I've seen in Europe.
Well, it ain't going to happen, Greg. Stay there with us, 51551. Andrew Manson is in Wicklow. Andrew, good afternoon. You were counting the shops in Arklow. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, there are 75 empty shops in Arklow the main street.
My God.
I was going to take photographs of them, and there wasn't enough room on the camera to do just the lower end of the main street.
Then what's wrong? What happened, Arklow?
Well, they did a sort of... Well, as your earlier caller said, all the main factories went.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were no big shall we say, rates coming in from the factories. So the council has to run itself, I presume, from the rates it can raise. And they just get too expensive.
And the businesses go.
Well, yes, 75 empty shops, which could be full of people making things.
Did you actually count, Andrew, did you actually count them one by one? Are you reading?
Yes, I went around one by one and counted them. There's actually more, but, you know, you can't just go up every street to where other shops are shut. You know, it just takes too long. But there are 75 from the end of the, you know, Wexford Road, the upper Main Street, the Main Street and the lower Main Street and down towards the harbour. And there are empty buildings around the harbour which I didn't even count.
And what are the rates for a shop in Main, the shops that are left on the Main Street in Arklow?
Well, a small one up by the bow of the boat would be about £3,500 a year for, and then your water on top of that. And that would be way out by the second roundabout out of the town. So not on the Main Street at
all. What do you do yourself, Andrew?
I'm an artist, but I'm the sponsor of a small CE scheme in Arklow Town. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're in there every day trying to get people back into work.
Well, CE schemes, which are one of the best things that ever happened in this country over the last 20 years, they've been decimated as well, haven't they, in the last two years?
Well, yes, exactly. And that's something we also hang on to by the skin of our teeth. You know, but, you know, in the good days, in the Celtic Tiger, we would get people back into work, you know, and they'd be on our scheme and gone and back to work. But there aren't any jobs for them down here in Arklow, as that farmer from Wexford said.
Paul, yeah, who lives in Arklow. Stay there for a sec, Andrew. Mags is in Trim in County Meath. Mags, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
You've had canvassing politicians at your door, you say.
I have, yeah. You were bringing up the point on relevance and politicians these days. I had two call to my door the other night and I just saw that they were politicians and they were canvassing. They were holding their paraphernalia and their leaflets. Mm. And I just said, I don't actually entertain politicians. I don't want to talk to you. They said, I'll go on, you will. I said, no, I won't. He tried handing me his leaflet and I said, no. And I closed the door in his face. Mm. There's no relevance to my life.
What's the point in being rude, Max?
I wasn't actually rude. I was smiling at them as I closed the door in the face.
And why didn't you? Because they're on radio and television non-stop and they're saying, oh, people at the doorsteps are talking about Alan Shatter and are talking about the tapes and they've no confidence in this, that or the other. One side says they've no confidence in the other side. And so why didn't you get your tuppence worth?
Well, that kind of stuff just is childish politics. It's ridiculous. You'd see it in the playground these days. It's got nothing to do with me. If I was going to talk to him about something, it would be about actual things that affect my life. Adoption issues or money issues or health issues and the way that the HSC is run or anything like that. But I'm not going to talk to him about their little antics that are going on. It's pointless and irrelevant.
And you're very strong on that, obviously.
Oh, I mean, 100%.
It comes back to the first call just exactly an hour ago. And that is Ciara saying what is happening in the Dáil has no relevance to her.
It's got no relevance to, I would say, the majority of people in Ireland. Who wants to know whether Alan Shatter is confident or not by people who are, if they were actually in control in the government at the moment, they'd be saying the exact opposite to try and keep their place. But because they're in opposition, they're going to try and argue the point, make themselves look better, and in the long term, hopefully they'll get into government next year so that they can make a hames of it. It's just, as I say, irrelevant. If that was France, it would have been stopped. The way that the French people don't put up with anything from their politicians is just inspirational. I lived in America for a long time, and again, if you say something and it needs doing, it gets done. It used to be a bit like that in Ireland, not anymore. It's just about feathering their own nests and getting their own pensions and sorting their own lives out. But I have an 18-year-old daughter and she can't get a job. I can't afford to send her to college. That's a real issue in my life, not whether Alan Shatter did this, that or the other.
And what's your point? If Alan Shatter did resign, obviously someone else from Fine Gael would get the job.
Yeah, it's just another suit lying straight to our faces, whether it's on the radio in some interview or whether it's on prime time or whether it's on 6-1 News, they're just lying to us.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that so categorically, Mags? Because
it's been proved time and again that this whole debacle about what's going on exactly at the moment is just evidence enough. evidence enough. They're insulting us to our faces, and we're just, the Irish people seem to want to take it time and again, whether it's this government or the next government or the previous government.
But, Jay, can I come in?
Yes, Andrew, yes.
Why aren't the local politicians up in arms to get the local property tax to spend in the towns? You know, and then they wouldn't need the rates, and then people would be working all the little shops or all the little workshops. You know, it's like they spent their money on a one-way system, which was in for 3 months and then cancelled.
This was in Arklow. You know, yeah.
In Arklow. You know, street architecture. What, to go past moribund shops? You know, crossings for people who don't walk up and down the main street.
Basically, you know,
they're using it for the wrong stuff. They don't look after the people who need jobs so they can buy things, who will then employ people to make the things they want to buy near where they buy them. You know, that's the whole point of economics. It goes round. You spend the money locally, and it's, you know, profits people locally, and then they spend the money locally.
But people like Mags, would you? Is that not part of the problem at the minute, that people are afraid to spend because they to look at what taxes they have to pay, where the universal, so if you're working, universal social charity, income
exactly.
tax, levies, tolls.
Yeah. Like, I'm just after buying some coal now for my fire at home.
That's gone up.
But there's a tax on smokeless fuels. Yeah. What?
Talked about at all, the increase in the price of fuel because of this new carbon tax, which we don't have to implement at this stage. But I know the arguments. I know the arguments about the environment and trying to stop people using coal or whatever. But that's another burden on people. Mag, stay there. I've got to take this break. And Andrew Foy and Pat is next. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
What happened? The beet industry, the sugar beet. Pat Cleary is on the line. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You want to try and bring sugar back to Ireland, but unbelievably. How do we get rid of it in the first place? Unbelievably, Ireland doesn't produce sugar.
Unbelievably, the negotiations back in the early noughties, at that time Europe was in surplus in sugar, and there were options for individual member states where they could reduce the output, and there were four different options that countries could have taken, and the least palatable one we took was to get out of it completely.
It was a political decision.
It was a political decision, but it was driven on the back of the crazy, you know, property bubble at that time. And Joe, we have concentrated on not going into the postmortems of fire clause because it wouldn't do your head in, and we felt that from the time in 2010 that the Court of Auditors report came out, which clearly indicated that the information supplied to Europe at that time, the statistics were flawed, and that we shouldn't have closed. And ironically, from that time, we are now in Europe in deficit of sugar, and the price of sugar has nearly doubled, you know. So the CAP negotiations that were concluded in July of last year have agreed that the sugar quota structure in Europe will be abolished from 2017. So that leaves it open for us to get back into sugar in Ireland, and we will be doing that, Joe.
Okay, and with that date, you need a lead in time to get
we're at the moment, we're trying to conclude the negotiations on a site, but we have a lot of butter, you know, it's a 400
and
million...
And Pat, is there anyone growing sugar beet in Ireland at the minute, even for export? Can we export sugar beet?
No, Joe, the only thing... No, it's not practical to export the sugar beet. What's happening is that growers who grew beet, because it was a very... I'm a farmer as well, and sugar beet was a very versatile crop in the crop rotation.
It was good for the land, you put it in,
For feeding, and some of them for energy, you know, because sugar beet also is a very versatile product in that you can also make ethanol from sugar, and you can make alcohol from it, and you can make bioplastics. It's a hugely versatile product. And ironically, some of the beet that we were growing was going to the north of Ireland for anaerobic digestion. But we're bringing back the industry to where it was in a single state-of-the-art factory in the southeast.
And when you say we, who are we, Pat?
Well, Beet Ireland are a group, some former growers. our chairman is a man called Michael Hoy. He's a farmer, but he's also he's a food processor. He runs Country Crest Foods in North Dublin. We have people who are involved in the machinery side of the business, Simon Cross, and we have a few people who have a lot of expertise.
And you have a location in mind?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Where's that?
But I cannot obviously say that for contractual issues at the moment. Yes, we have a site at
But I still think one of the awful enduring images in my head from this lunacy that was a Celtic Tiger was the plants in Mallow and Carlow being dismantled, being placed on low loaders, massive convoys heading to the docks. I think the factories were shipped. I think one of them ended up in Israel.
That's correct. The Mallow plant
Lock,
is in
stock
Israel,
and barrel,
producing sugar.
Working away.
But, Joe, we're building a new, I suppose, from for where we're sitting at the moment, it's very important that we learn from the mistakes of the past. And one of the things, we've gone out and had consultation with growers on an ongoing basis for the last 3 years. Well, and one of the things we want to make sure is that growers actually have a say in the industry, and we're giving growers the option to actually put money into it.
Well, best of luck with that, Pat Cleary. Marie Bourke is in Galway. Marie, good afternoon.
Hi,
Pat.
Joe.
You're listening. What's happening in the Dáil, is it relevant to you?
Yeah, very, very relevant.
Why?
I live down the west of Ireland, and there's, as far as I'm concerned, rural Ireland is dead. There is no work. There's nothing being done. There's no roads being done. Nothing at all. And I'm sick and tired of listening about, I know it's a concern. It is a concern with a lot of people. It's security and all that lot, But this is going on now for weeks and weeks, and it's the same thing being regurgitated. That doesn't affect my life. What affects my life is jobs for the people down, especially down the west of Ireland, children having to leave school, having to emigrate. I mean, I don't know what this country would do without the likes of America and England and Australia at the moment, because I'll tell you one thing.
And how are you managing at the minute, Marie? What difference has it made to your life?
My husband's out of work 5 years.
Okay.
He was in the famous construction bubble that happened in this country. And we come back. I mean, I'm not knocking Ireland. Ireland is a beautiful place to live in and everything, but you can't eat scenery. You know, you're given this amount every week to live off. You have to make do with it. You have to sort it out. And I mean, as a good job, I am good with money.
Well, to come back to Christine's point an hour ago, hope, the future.
No, there isn't.
Why not?
I can see no, there's no work down here. There's absolutely nothing. There's roads need to be done, hedges need to be cut. There could be some sort of incentive. And we're going to get politicians around at my door. I haven't seen a politician at my door in at least 8 years. Never. They'll come round now, they'll promise you the sun, the moon, the stars, and nothing will happen. I was at Mass on Sunday, and I got a leaflet shoved in my car door window. Can I name the...
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It was Ronan Mullen to vote for him.
I've never seen Ronan Mullen.
I've never spoke to him.
But you've seen him on telly. He's on telly
a lot. I've seen him on television, obviously, but I can't. That's no good to me. He's above in the Dáil in Dublin. And it's true for what Mag said. They're just suits. They come in. They're paid a huge salary of at least £92,000 a year for a TD. We have 166 TDs in a population of just over 4 million people. They're all in it for themselves. What I would do, they all want reining in, and somebody with a bit of guts stand up and say, enough's enough.
OK, Thomas is in Clare. Thanks, Marie and Galway. Thomas, briefly. Go ahead, Thomas.
Joey, that last caller has identified much of what I wanted to bring to the programme this afternoon. I'm not a great lover of your programme, but I thought today is specifically relevant to everything that's about to happen. And I think if people are so disillusioned by politics, they have a fantastic opportunity in the up-and-coming local elections. Now, I'm not saying European elections. I said local.
Okay, what do they do? In your view?
Abandon the ballot box. Do not vote.
So people still get elected, Thomas?
Pardon?
Even if the family members of the candidates only voted, there still would be people elected.
I understand that, Joe, and there are certain risks attached to the point I am making.
Okay.
But it is important that if the turnout could be as low as 2 or 3%, it sends a message to the powers that be. They need to get their act together. Okay. They need to stop this confusion. Governments love to hanker for this kind of confusion that's going on with Alan Shatter and the police.
Okay.
principle, you know. But this is a great opportunity. Abandon the ballot box.
Okay, thanks, Thomas and Clare. 51551 continues. Siobhan Hawke produced. Derek Mooney is next.